This is KGNU's Morning Magazine for Thursday, May 20th. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Thank you for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. Coming up on today's program, a new job description will soon be drawn up for the University of Colorado president after a 5-4 vote Wednesday led to the departure of Mark Kennedy. Today's weekly food segment features a visit with a family that makes and sells pupusas, a stuffed tortilla snack popular in Central America. And KGNU will once again be bringing you bi-weekly updates on what's happening in the world of cannabis. This morning, we'll hear about a multifaceted Colorado marijuana bill that just had its first committee meeting this week. The bill could require further review of a medical marijuana patient's mental health history and force coroners to include cannabis data in their death reports. More on that coming up. We'll also take a look at what's coming up in this week's It's the Economy. At the bottom of the hour, we'll have the BBC News headlines. And then Rosana Longo brings us her latest Trends podcast. This time, she looks at the lack of representation of journalists of color in newsrooms and how it impacts our ability to understand issues affecting each other's communities. Then at 9:30, a mix of eclectic music with the Morning Sound Alternative. All that is coming up, so stay tuned to your community radio station. And now the headlines. As cases of COVID-19 continue a downward trajectory, the city and county of Denver want their employees to return to in-person work at the office starting June 1st. Most employees have been working remotely for more than a year because of the pandemic. The city of Denver said the return to in-person work would happen in phases. Masks and social distancing would not be required inside city offices. That's in line with new city guidance that took effect Sunday. However, officials said the precautions are still strongly encouraged for people who are not vaccinated. In Boulder, City Council has announced it will return to council chambers for in-person proceedings starting July 13th, but hasn't announced when city employees are expected back. Meanwhile, in an effort to help Colorado recover from the pandemic, Governor Jared Polis is offering a financial incentive to those who are still unemployed to get a job. KGNU's Steve Miller has more.
The executive order issued by Governor Polis on Wednesday is called Colorado Jumpstart. The Denver Post reports that to qualify, a person will have to be verified through the website ID.me and have received at least 1 week of unemployment benefits of at least $25 between March 28th of this year and May 16th. Those who return to work between May 16th and May 29th will be eligible for up to $1,600 for no longer being unemployed. For people who return to work May 30th through June 26th will be eligible for up to $1,200, but they'll have to stay employed to get the full benefit. Half of the money will be paid after 4 weeks of employment, and the other half, if still employed, will be paid after 8 weeks. Federal data showed that there were more than 200,000 people in Colorado unemployed in March. Job board websites show more than 280,000 active job openings, suggesting many have chosen not to enter or return to the workforce. State Republicans were in talks with Democrats on a bill with a similar incentive program, but Polis's order lets the state move faster and negates the need for legislation. I'm Steve Miller for KGNU.
A Loveland police officer is facing criminal charges of excessive use of force after pushing a 73-year-old woman with dementia to the ground and pinning her against the hood of his patrol car. Prosecutors said Wednesday the officer's partner on the scene is also accused of failing to stop or report the actions. Austin Hopp is facing charges of second-degree assault, attempting to influence a public servant, and official misconduct in last year's arrest of Karen Garner in Loveland. Daria Jalali, who arrived after Gardner was handcuffed, is facing charges of failing to report use of force, failing to intervene, and official misconduct. Both officers have since resigned. A federal lawsuit was filed last month by the woman's family based on video showing what happened at the scene and officers later laughing about what occurred. At the same time, the FBI says it's investigating the death of an Asian American teenage girl in Colorado more than 3 years ago as a possible hate crime. Maggie Long was killed at her family's home in Bailey. Authorities released composite sketches of at least three men they believed were involved in her death, but no arrests have been made. The FBI did not provide any information about why agents are looking at the possibility of a hate crime and did not immediately respond to telephone and email messages from the Associated Press earlier this week. Colorado legislators continue to negotiate a bill about climate change with no timeline for its advancement. Colorado Politics reports that Senate Bill 200 is designed primarily to make the state's Air Quality Control Commission meet goals to reduce greenhouse gas emissions that have already been enacted. But some Democratic lawmakers and climate activists worry that a roadmap to meeting the 2050 goal, released by Governor Jared Polis earlier this year, would fall short without clear, enforceable standards. Last month, Polis told the Gazette that if Colorado is going to meet carbon and air quality goals, it should be done through legislative debate and not through an unelected board. Senate Majority Leader Steve Fenberg, Democrat from Boulder, said there is no timeline for advancing the bill. He added that he personally supports the legislation and is working with all sides right now to see what the path forward is. Despite opposition from three of the nine members, Boulder City Council on Tuesday approved the renovation of a University Hill property known as the Marpa House. When the building is redeveloped, it's set to become 16 apartments with three bedrooms apiece, housing a total of 48 residents. During the public comment period, homeowners, including Valerie Kendren, continued to express fears that the property will soon be occupied by CU students who will not respect the character of the neighborhood.
So we're dismayed that our community has not been heard and that you can't understand or won't, that you are making a decision that will impact us in a detrimental way for many, many years. We are willing to work with the developer to come up with a new plan that works for all. And yes, we know that's daunting and it's going to cost money, but it's worth it to get it right. We need to get it right now to preserve this neighborhood for generations to come.
There will be stringent conditions imposed once renovation of the Marpa House is complete, including longer quiet hours and parking restrictions, and a complaint review process that will continue for the first 10 years. Nonetheless, council members Adam Swetlick, Mirabai Nagel, and Mark Wallach voted against the redevelopment, with Wallach suggesting it isn't fair to the neighborhood.
I'm afraid that in going down this path, we've once again abandoned the Hill community and taken an expedient road despite our continual lip service that we offer them. Again, we've communicated the message that this community is on its own, and if the next time a developer offers to buy their property, they should take the offer because their days as a vibrant residential neighborhood are numbered.
The building at 891 12th Street was originally built in 1923 as a fraternity house and was later occupied by Buddhists with the Shambhala community. More sunshine and warmer temperature predicted across the Front Range today, looking for a high temperature of 72 and a low tonight of 50. Warmer Friday with a high of 78 degrees. Currently outside our Boulder studios, it's 49 degrees. You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. As expected, the University of Colorado Board of Regents approved a transition agreement Wednesday that sets up the departure of the CU president after only 2 years at the helm. KGNU's Roz Brown has the story.
Following a brief, if uncomfortable, virtual meeting, the CU Board of Regents voted to release Colorado President Mark Kennedy from his contract, but not before the Republican minority accused Democrats of bowing to a liberal political base, with Regent Sue Sharkey calling the decision to dismiss Kennedy unfounded and unfair, and alleging it only happened because Kennedy, a Republican, was not a left-wing academic.
Whether it's the expression of or the opportunity to provide viewpoint diversity, respect for differing opinions, or even the leadership of CU's president, who happens to be a Republican.
Republican Regent Chance Hill invoked the woke mob to express his disappointment that Kennedy was not given a chance to serve out his first term ending next year.
Coloradans should take notice of what the Democrats did here today. We will lose our state and our country if voters continue to elect Democrats more interested in appeasing the woke mob than in doing what is right.
Kennedy, a former GOP congressman and president of the University of North Dakota, replaced Bruce Benson 2 years ago. While touring the four-campus system, he was met with criticism for his congressional votes on LGBTQ and women's reproductive rights, and since arriving in Boulder, for not adequately addressing diversity issues. He was recently censured by student and faculty groups over claims of failed leadership and lack of shared governance. That led Regent Nolbert Chavez, a Democrat, to push back on the assertions that the dismissal was purely political, noting that previous CU presidents have been Republicans.
I just want to remind folks of the exemplary service that CU received from several former Republican elected officials, including Hank Brown, John Buechner, and while Bruce was never elected, he was considered a political animal. And so to pile everything onto partisanship, I think, is unfair and doesn't bear out.
The 5-4 party line vote was possible because Democrats were able to take control of the Board of Regents following last November's election after nearly four decades in the minority. Chair of the Regents, Glenn Gallegos, a Republican, voted against the ouster of Kennedy, but nonetheless called on the board to unite on behalf of CU.
At the end of the day, it is what it is. I've been amazed by the high road that President Kennedy has taken. And as a board member, I think it's important that we start to transition to a board that's going to, again, look out for the interests of our constituents. And that's the University of Colorado, not personal interests or not political interests. And for me, it would be good if we started talking in terms of quality of a CU education, the type of research that we want to be turning out, the student success and the diplomas that change students' lives. We've been very lacking in terms of what it is that makes this a great university. And Regents, we need to get back to those discussions.
Kennedy will leave his job on July 1st with a $1.36 million separation payment. For KGNU, I'm Roz Brown.
For this week's food segment, KGNU's Rosana Longo visits with Franklin Escobar, a member of the extended family behind Pupusas Familia. The family makes a Central American snack known as pupusas and sells them at Boulder's Farmers Market.
So we are here at the Farmers Market. It's the end of the Farmers Market this Saturday. And I have with me the owner of Pupusas Familia. And it is a well-known business that started as a family. And now you're even selling at the Farmers Market. Explain to me how you start your business.
I started my business in 2019. I used to work for somebody else before, for Tres Pupusas. And then I started my own business because they didn't do it anymore. And that's when my family and I, my sister and my aunt, we used to work together. So we started here in Boulder. And now we actually do Boulder and Logmont's Farmers Market. And we also have it on online market with the Farmers Market. That is like a curbside pickup too. Yes, and that's how we start.
Yeah, it's not easy to start a business. So in other words, what you're telling me is that when you realized that the other business was not going on, you decided to ask your family, hey, let's just come together and continue doing this because there is a need. There's people buying our pupusas.
Okay, yes, it was really hard. Like when the other business didn't continue, it was really sad for us because we love working at the market, the farmers market. And we also, like, that was so money that we help ourselves and help our family back home. And pupusas are a corn stuffed tortilla. And yes, a lot of people love them. We have it from the vegan options to meat and veggie without cheese. Some people don't eat cheese. And yeah, that is what pupusas is.
So where are you from and what's your name and what's the name of the family? Because I see Pupusas Familia, that means that it's a family-owned local business.
Yes, mi nombre es Franklin Escobar, y soy de El Salvador y las pupusas son tradicional de El Salvador. Y como familia, nuestro apellido es Escobar, trabajamos pura familia en el negocio, entonces estamos muy contentos.
Gracias por hablar en español. I think it is important for our listeners to understand that this local business have the whole family in. Entonces, es toda la familia la que trabaja. And what you're telling me now is that you know, not only support your family here, this business, but you're also able to help your family back home.
Sí, tratamos siempre de no perder la costumbre de ayudar a nuestra familia en nuestro lugar de origen y ayudarnos a nosotros aquí todos. Tratamos y siempre la manera de ser muy unidos y como familia somos muy unidos, nos consideramos.
Thank you so much for what you just said, because it makes me realize that, yes, we as Latino families normally, we're a collective. We work all together as one, and we bring the family together in, you know, in our businesses and in our lives. And it is a different way of thinking even. In the American mentality, is much more that you need to get your own life. But for us, is that we're taking care of everybody. And if everybody's fine, then we're happy. Do you think that what I have said is something that resonates with you? ¿Te resuena eso?
Sí, es muy cierto. Creo que Latinos, we are, like, as a family, we always think of, like, each other, and, like, we don't, if we see a member of our family going through a hard time, we always there and try to support. And that's a really good thing of Latino community, that siempre somos muy unidos como familia y nunca dejamos que la otra familia esté pasando por mal momento sin ayudar.
Así es, no dejamos que las personas que queremos estén batallando demasiado, sino que más bien les incluimos en nuestros negocios. We kind of include them in our businesses, and sometimes that is good, but also sometimes that's a little problematic.
Yes, sometimes.
So if you can speak about that you know, there you are supporting your family, is a business that is a local family business, and it has its difficulties. What would you recommend to those that would like to start a business just like you, an entrepreneur?
First of all, you have to be passionate about what you want, what kind of business you want to have, and like you have to study. I would say, like, study the kind of business they want. I think if we educate ourselves on where we want to go or what we want to do, that's gonna be a little bit easier. It's always gonna be hard in the beginning. You have to, like, just keep it up and don't give up, because starting a business is not easy. You have to invest a lot of time. A lot of time you have to find a good resource to do it, and don't give up. I would say the most important thing is to not give up. It's gonna be hard in the beginning. Probably a couple of years is gonna be hard. Like, I still like going through a hard time, like, doing the business, but I have the support of my family, of the people who are like, hey, don't give up. And like, I think, like, if you connect with people who are, like, giving you good advices, that's another thing that you're gonna...
You have pointed something important, that is people that are giving you good advices. Have you received support from beyond, you know, from your family? Have you received support from the community, but also from the government advising you and providing you with some support so that you can move forward your business?
Yes, I have the support, and, like, I take English tutorials at the Boulder Library, and my tutor helped me a lot. And I also started a program at the Boulder Library, who they have a small business development center, and they helped me a lot too. So, like, yes, just look for the sources that you that can help you to take your business wherever you want, and just work hard for it. Yeah. It's not easy.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
For KGNU, I am Rosana Longo.
And now it's time for an update on cannabis news here at KGNU. From now on, we'll be bringing you these marijuana updates the second and fourth Thursday of each month. I'm Hannah Lee Myers, and I'm joined by longtime cannabis correspondent and friend of KGNU, Leland Rucker. Leland is the senior editor at thenewsstation.com. Leland, thank you so much for joining us.
It's good to be here.
So tell us about what is in the news this week for cannabis.
One thing that really surprised me is that Colorado's marijuana sales eclipsed the $500 million mark in the first quarter of 2021. And that's according to the Department of Revenue. And that number comes by adding medical and recreational sales together. It doesn't include accessories, just marijuana sales. And sales reached $207 million in the month of March alone. That translates into $39.6 million in taxes. There's been more than $10.5 billion in cannabis sold in Colorado since it was legalized in 2014. I think it reminds us that people like cannabis, and a lot of people like it. Meanwhile, the legislature is still fiddling with the logistics of the process. And, you know, somebody asked me, well, how long is that going to take? Well, there are alcohol bills still in the legislature today, and that's been over 100 years. So it'll take them a while. But right now there's a bill, HB 1317. And there's a lot of opposition to this one. It was just heard in committee on Tuesday. In fact, it passed the committee 13-0. That was the Public and Behavioral Health and Human Services Committee. And next it goes to the Committee on Finance. And there's a lot of stuff in this bill. The bill wants to limit more access to young people and to regulate concentrates and high-potency THC products. You know, there was a lot of talk about capping potency limits, THC potency. That was kind of the big talk, a big scuttlebutt over the last couple of months about the possibility of this bill. But the bill doesn't have any potency limits, but it does require further review of a medical marijuana patient's mental health history before a recommendation is made, and that recommendation would have to include documented levels of THC potency. I don't know how they're going to do that. Dosage form, the daily authorized quantity, and consumption instructions for patients. And it will create a scientific review council that will make recommendations about high-potency cannabis. And I can understand the feelings behind this, but I'm just not sure whether or not this is the way to do it.
Well, I mean, from your perspective, what do you see as some of the pros and cons of this bill passing?
Well, I think that probably the people who will be affected the most are medical patients. One of the things that the bill would do is to limit concentrate purchases to 8 grams per day, and that's down from 40 grams, which is in the current law. So that would really take that down, and it also has a provision that THC concentrates would have to be packaged in 10-gram servings. In other words, much like they did with edibles, make it a much smaller serving. And there's a lot of medical patients who probably would need more than that or probably could use more than that. And I think that's going to make it really difficult for medical patients. Right now, there's about 4,000 patients from the ages 11 to 17. You know, and they just passed a bill that said that you can keep medicine at the school now. You can actually keep the medicine, and someone besides your parents can give that medicine to the child. So that's helped for sure. But this 10-gram servings, I'm not exactly sure whether or not this is going to be a good thing. They're saying that it wouldn't have to go into effect until the beginning of 2023, which would give them plenty of time to figure that out. But I'm skeptical about that. It would also, this is another weird thing, it would require coroners to include cannabis data in their death reports. Even though there's no evidence that cannabis is involved in people's death, that using cannabis has been involved in people's death, but it would require a coroner in each case of a suicide, overdose death, or accidental death to order a toxicology screen for the Colorado Violent Death Reporting System. And then that department will produce an annual report of the data beginning January 2 of next year. That's quite a change. And the thing about this bill is that it has the support of the marijuana industry group, the Colorado LEADS. They're both trade organizations. The Boulder Valley BVSD has spoken in support. Smart Colorado and Blue Rising PAC that have both pushed for potency limits, they're behind this. But a lot of advocacy groups, and especially black groups, say they weren't even involved in negotiations, and they're really upset at many provisions in the bill. So we'll have to see how this goes. It goes to the Finance Committee next. And remember, the session ends on June the 12th.
Well, always a lot changing in cannabis news, and we will be bringing you those updates again twice a month here on KGNU. Thanks to my guest, Leland Rucker, who is, again, the senior editor at thenewsstation.com. And I'm KGNU's Hanalee Myers. Thanks again, Leland.
Thank you.
Before we go, let's take a quick peek at what's coming up on tonight's It's the Economy with Liz Lane.
Tune in this Thursday, May 20th at 6 p.m. when It's the Economy hosts a one-hour call-in show focused on the increasingly relevant topic of cryptocurrencies. What are they, and what are the differences between Bitcoin, Ethereum, Dogecoin, and Shiba Inu? What is the blockchain, and why do so many crypto aficionados believe that crypto is a model for a democratized economic future without government, corporate, or central bank intervention? That's Cryptocurrency and Your Questions this Thursday, May 20th at 6 p.m. on KGNU Community Radio.
And that does it for today's program. You've been listening to The Morning Magazine here on listener-sponsored community radio. I've been your host, Shannon Young. A reminder that if you'd like to share a comment with KGNU, call us at 303-447-9911. We play the messages back on Tuesday mornings at 8:25 during The Morning Magazine. Music heard during The Morning Magazine is produced by Poddington Bear and used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. If you have news tips for us, email us at news@kgnu.org.